Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join us, let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So we're in for a treat. We've been discussing step 12. We started last week. We're going to finish with the second half of step 12 this week. And if you come back next week, we'll be talking about step 1. So that's how we do it around here. And we're delighted to have Jeremy and Anne Marie from driven all the way down from Richmond to share with us tonight. And I don't intend to read you to death, but I'm just going to, like we do, I'm just going to read a paragraph and kick it over to them. So step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And we're going to start on page 96. Suppose now you're making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Jeremy?
Good evening, everybody. My name is Jeremy. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And it's really an honor and a pleasure to be here tonight. We appreciate you guys asking us out. And I just start off say my sobriety date is July 3rd, 2000. I have a sponsor. I have a home group, which is the Awakenings Group in Richmond, Virginia. We meet Sunday mornings at Johnston Willis Hospital, 9:30. So if you're ever in Richmond, we would love for you to stop by. And for me, I am sober today as a direct result of the 12th step. I was a patient in a detox in Richmond, and members of Alcoholics Anonymous carried a meeting up to us and, you know, told us about AA and told us about what it had done for them. And that was the first time in my life I related to somebody else and felt like there was somebody that understood. And there was tons of people before that had tried to help me, but I could never identify. And sitting in that detox, having a total stranger talk to me, by the time they left, I totally trusted these people, and I felt like they understood what I was going through. So I am thankful for the 12-step. You know, as far as this paragraph in the book, you know, my experience was, you know, coming to meeting those people in detox and them telling us that there was a way out, that it was through the 12 steps, that I needed to do certain things if I was going to stay sober, get a sponsor, get a home group, go through the steps. And, you know, I approached this gentleman maybe a couple of weeks after I had gotten out of detox and been to a few meetings, because they said, you know, I kept hearing over and over again, if, you know, you want to stay sober, you're going to need to get a sponsor that can take you through the steps. And I kept hearing the term temporary sponsor, which I thought was awesome. Because, you know, everything in my life had been temporary to that point. And, you know, I remember asking this guy if he would be my temporary sponsor. And he said, well, the only thing that will make it temporary is if you don't do what I ask you to do. And I was like, oh, you know. But how it relates to this is, you know, I talked to that gentleman after I had asked him that outside for a while. And, you know, the first thing he asked me was I done? And I knew exactly what he was talking about. I said, yeah, I'm done. And he said, next question, are you willing to do anything I ask you to do if I tell you to keep you sober? And so what he did for me is he kind of combined this on the first visit. You know, he said, here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Here's what I am willing to do. I'm willing to take you through the steps. I'm willing to show you how to stay sober. I'm willing to, you know, show you what I've done to have this new way of life. And in exchange, I'm going to ask you to do certain things. I'm going to expect you to go to 4 meetings a week. I'm going to ask you to get a home group. You know, he laid it all out on the table right from the get-go. I will help you if you're willing to do this. And he said, if you're not, if what I'm asking is too much, that's fine. I appreciate it. Maybe there's somebody else that can help you. You know, and he kind of did what it says here. You know, don't be discouraged if they want to talk to somebody else, because I've had that plenty of times where I've offered to sponsor people or do things and they, well, I don't know that I can do all that, or I don't know if it's the right person, and you know, nobody's ever taken it personally. You know, what it tells me is, and that's exactly what he did for me, I'm willing to help if you're willing. If you're not, great, you know, good luck. And that's how I am with guys today. I don't take it personal. I've had guys ask me to sponsor them, and then they've, you know, maybe a week or so later asked somebody else, because they said they seem to relate more to somebody else. And I take no offense to that at all, because I'm not everybody's voice. You know, not everybody hears what I say. They may hear, somebody may be saying the exact same thing, but their experience says it in a way that they grasp it. So I never take it personally, you know, if somebody says that. But I know for me, you know, it was important that he laid that out and said, here's what I will do for you if you're willing to do this. And I did what he said, and my life changed. So, you know, that's my experience with that paragraph.
Thank you. We're going to continue on page 98. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust God and clean house. Jeremy?
Yeah, I've got experience on a couple of sides of this. You know, that detox that I was a patient at, I had the privilege for years of carrying a meeting up there. And I can't tell you how many times I heard, you know, people after the meeting, we would usually open it up for questions or, you know, be available to talk. And they would say, oh, man, that AA thing sounds awesome. I'm definitely going to try it out, but I really need to get my job straight first, and you know, I need to make my wife happy again, and I really need to, you know, spend more time with the kids, and you know, all that kind of stuff. And you know, which, don't get me wrong, is a good thing, but it's that explains the whole point. It's like, if I don't have my sobriety, I lose everything. And what I've learned from my experience is anything that I put in front of my sobriety, I will lose. There's no question about that. And I have some really recent experience with this, how, you know, the question of how and when to give. You know, I was taught early on from my first sponsor that, you know, I am your sponsor. I'm here to help you stay sober. I'm here to show you what to do to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am not your banker, your taxi cab, your hotel, your, you know, relationship counselor. If I have experience with it, I will gladly share it with you, and, you know, hopefully I can help. But my job is just to help you stay sober. And, you know, I've carried that for a long time, and I've done fairly well about, you know, keeping that distinction when I'm helping a guy. Not to say that we can't help somebody get a job or we can't give somebody a meal if they don't have it. Not at all, but I just had this recent experience where I carry a meeting into the prisons every Thursday night, and this guy was getting out. And he'd been coming to the meetings for probably about 9 months, and, you know, he was gung-ho, and I'm going to do this thing. And, you know, as soon as he got out, I went above and beyond what I should have done as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I filled his closet full of clothes. I gave him money to eat. We took him out to dinner a bunch. I helped him get a bunch of, you know, work until he got a job. And I just, like, showered him with everything that he needed because I was so excited that this guy was going to, you know, get gung-ho and do this. And as soon as he got a job and a place to live and a girlfriend, he was gone. You know? And, you know, it went from, wow, you're so awesome, thank you so much for everything you've done, to, you know, why do you keep harping on about calling you and getting all these meetings? And, you know, I'm a grown man and you shouldn't tell me what to do. And, you know, and it just disappeared. And, I love the guy to death and I hope he does well. But I learned another valuable lesson, even after a few years sober here, that, you know, my job is not to fix your living situation. I'm just here to show you what I've done to stay sober. And if I can help in little bits, absolutely. I mean, I know when I first got sober, I had no extra money. And I remember one night in particular, they said, do you want to come out and eat after the meeting? Oh, you know, I'm tired and I just think I'll go home. And the guy said, you don't have any money, do you? No. You know, that's not it. That's not it. And he's like, come on, come out and eat with us. And I said, but I don't have any money. And he's like, well, you know, how about I buy your dinner, and then when you get some money, you can buy somebody else's dinner. You know, so there's been plenty of those times as well, too, where, you know, I've been able to make somebody come in and feel welcome where they wouldn't normally, you know, be able to do that, or feel like they're obsolete or out of the group because they can't afford a meal or whatever the case is. But I had this experience with this guy where I did way too much for him. You know, there's a difference between him coming to me saying, hey, can you help me find this, or can you help me do this? That's a different story other than, here, let me just lay it on a plate for you so you don't have to do anything for yourself. Because that wasn't done for me. And, you know, it's just another lesson to learn that, you know, I can't spoon feed somebody. I can be helpful, but I can't give them what they need. They have to work for it themselves. So.
We're going to continue on page 98. Now, the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he's lucky enough to have a home. Though his family may be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. I think that's it.
You know, my experience with that, when I first got sober, I was single and I didn't have a wife or kids or anything like that. So I kind of had the freedom to, you know, do as much AA as I wanted and that kind of stuff. And, you know, one thing that was important to me, which ties into this and extremely helped me in the future, was, you know, my sponsor saying that the meetings I needed to go to were committed. And what that meant is I had to pick a certain amount of meetings a week and I had to go to those same meetings every week unless I was dead sick or out of town. And I didn't understand that at first. I thought that was a little rigid, you know, hey, I should be able to just, as long as I get to meetings, I get to meetings, right? And he said, well, there's a couple of reasons I ask you to do that. One is so that you get in a pattern that you know that night is your meeting. So when stuff comes up in the future, hey, we want to go to a movie, hey, we want to do this, whatever, there's just no discussion. It's like, it's my meeting. You know, I mean, I just go no matter what, unless it's, you know, of course today, like she said, we do have a child and stuff, and if he has an event at school, you know, of course I show up, but I don't get to just blow it off for a random dinner or, hey, there's something cool on TV. You know, I always know that I'm there, and that helped me make that a regular part of my pattern, and also so people saw me on a regular basis, so that when I don't show up, people start to question, how come Jeremy's not here, you know? And where this really hit home for me was, as my wife explained, you know, after 11 years, she relapsed. And I didn't know for a while that that's what was happening. All I knew was that she had slowly started pulling away from AA. It was less and less meetings. Then it was that home group's not so good. You know, I'm going to quit it, but I'll find another one. And, you know, and meanwhile, I'm trying to go to all my meetings and do what I'm supposed to do. And I'm coming home and she's saying, oh, well, you know, there's Mr. AA. You know, it's, you know, nice. You can go out to a meeting while your family's at home. And, you know, and so where this really hits home for me was having to come home every night and deal with that. And try not to, like I said, practice these principles, not have an argument, not try to defend myself, just do what I was supposed to do and treat her appropriate as much as possible. You know, that, well, I'm sorry you feel that way, but this is what I have to do. And, you know, I know for me that saved my life, because that's really hard when the person you love is, you know, that was so supportive of what you're doing is now all of a sudden, you know, your worst enemy when it comes to what's saving your life. So having to come home and try not to get in a fight and an argument about that and still go and do what I was supposed to do was very difficult. I mean, it was a very hard time. And, you know, thank God, you know, she's back. And, I mean, that's a miracle, and I'm thrilled for that. Because I wasn't sure what the hell was going on, you know. I wasn't sure if it was menopause or what. I was, you know. You know, but it just goes to show how, you know, for me, that where those committed meetings tied in really made the difference between, well, I'm sorry, I know I'm going to make you mad, but I have to go. And there's going to be times like that, and I've experienced that with guys that I've sponsored, that, you know, they get sober and they have a family, and after about 3 or 4 months, their wife or their kids are, well, how come you're gone all the time? You know, we want you here. And don't get me wrong, I need to find a reasonable balance between getting to my meetings and participating with my family. Just because I'm sober, I don't get to ignore them anymore, but I do have my basic commitments that I need to fill regardless. And through that period, it's what kept me here. I mean, it really was. And I mean, it was one of the hardest things I ever experienced in my sobriety. You know, was watching the person I love drift away and not being able to do anything about it, and not as well criticizing her and going, well, you should get to more meetings and you should call your sponsor, and telling her what to do. You know, just stepping back and trying to be an example by what I was doing. So that's, you know, that's how it affected me in my experience.
All right, we're going to press on to page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. Jeremy?
Oh, I love this paragraph. My old home group still reads it at the end of every meeting. And the reason it hit me so hard is I remember getting to this spot in the book, you know, after going through the steps with my sponsor. And, you know, we started talking about helping other people and what I had to do to sponsor other alcoholics. And we read this paragraph, and it said, if you and the new man persist, remarkable things will happen. And at this point, a ton of things had already changed in my life. I mean, on the outside, it looked a lot the same, but for once, I was a trustworthy employee. For once, my family started to trust me. They weren't asking me where I was all the time, calling me, making sure I was alive. You know, I'm showing up to work on a regular basis. If I say I'm going to be there, I'm going to be there. I'm feeling happier than I had ever been. I mean, life was just wonderful. And it's sitting here telling me that if I persist helping another drunk, remarkable things will happen. I mean, my life has already dramatically changed. What else could possibly happen, you know? So that was another just, you know, the big book's just full of promises and little goodies that that'll come true. And that happened for me. You know, when I started helping another alcoholic, I realized that was the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't get me wrong, I have a wonderful life because of AA today. I mean, everything I have in my life, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. But that first time I got to sit down with another drunk and tell him, you don't have to live like this, and I can show you how. I mean, that's remarkable in itself, that a guy that could barely even hold a job, who was a grown man living at his mom's because I couldn't afford to move out, you know, that was working for, you know, minimum wage because I couldn't get a better job. I mean, I'm driving a truck that's leaking oil, ready to blow up. I mean, you know, everybody had stuck their neck out trying to help me over and over again. And yet this guy now all of a sudden is able to help somebody else. And talking to that person and watching them go, yeah, that's me. You know, I get it, really. And getting that little glimmer of hope in their eyes, you know, and watching them start to transform. I mean, I've got a guy that I sponsor today that that I talked to as a patient in the same detox I was at, you know, when I was carrying meetings up there. And he's 9.5 years sober now. And I mean, he doesn't resemble that guy at all. I mean, he's, honestly, I'm a little, you know, that's a resentment of mine. He's a lot more successful than I am, you know, financial wise. But, you know, hey, whatever. But you know, what a miracle that I didn't think that was something that was going to be a gift. You know, I was hoping if you can just help me stop drinking so I don't want to kill myself every morning, that's not too bad. And now I've got this wonderful relationship with this guy that's been sober all these years. And I mean, it's a gift that you can't explain. I mean, it is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was told when I first got sober that I was going to go through the steps so that I could help somebody else. And I was like, do what? I mean, come on, man, really? This is, you know, this is about me getting better and me being happy and, you know, all that kind of, you know, happy, joyous, and free, right? You know, and that's absolutely true. God wants me happy, joyous, and free. But what I found from my own experience is I'm the most happy, joyous, and free when I'm inconveniencing myself to help somebody else. When that sponsee calls and they got something going on and I'm watching TV and I'm like, oh God, you know, they're going to call and whine about something or whatever. And I just go, all right. And I pick up the phone and I start talking. All of a sudden, it's just like a switch. You know, something changes. Or when I'm tired and I've worked all day and I don't want to go to that meeting. And I go and I see that guy or that girl that picks up a white chip, and you can just tell they're terrified and they're frightened, and you can go over and say hi and make them feel welcome, and, you know, for an hour they feel okay. I mean, that's amazing, and that's the kind of stuff that they're talking about here. And that, you know, for me, when it says no matter what your present circumstances, you know, at a year sober, everything on the outside of my life was still the same. I still made $6 an hour. I still lived in a room at my mom's house. I still drove a 20-year-old pickup truck that leaked a hole. You know, all that kind of stuff. But I was happier than I had ever been. You know, I felt an inner peace and a joy that I had never felt in my entire life. So to me, it doesn't, AA isn't here to change me and make me a millionaire. It's here to change me. And that's what it did. It changed me on the inside. It got rid of that giant hole that said, you're not enough. You know, the only hole that alcohol seemed to fill. You're not enough. Nobody understands. You're worthless. You're taking up space. You know, why don't you just get it over with? And those thoughts haven't come for a long time. And that simply is because I try to stick my hand out as much as possible and make somebody feel welcome and let them know that they don't have to live like that anymore. And every time I do that, my life just seems to get better. So. Okay.
We're going to continue on page 100. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. Excuse me. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap, And even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. Jeremy? Mm.
Wow, this is awesome. I remember, I share this experience all the time. When I was probably about 3 months sober, I was going to like this outpatient thing that the detox had recommended. You know, and I was talking to my sponsor on a regular basis, and I came up to him after the meet, and I said, "Hey, I got to tell you something." I said, "I heard something in our class today that was really, really awesome." He said, "Yeah." He said, "Tell me about it." And I said, "Yeah, they told me that one thing that was really going to help me stay sober is I needed to stay away from my triggers." And he said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Well, can you explain to me what triggers are?" And I said, "Well, according to them, what triggers are, you know, anything that reminds me of alcohol or drinking, you know, like people, places, things that, you know, I associate with drinking." And he goes, "Oh, okay." He said, "All right, well, let me ask you a question then." He said, "That truck you drove to the meeting, did you drink in that truck?" I was like, "Well, of course I did." And he's like, "Well, you're going to have to sell it." And I was like, "Oh, okay, well, that's not really that big a deal." He goes, "What about where you're living?" "You mean my mom's house?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "You ever drink there?" I was like, "Well, yeah, of course I did." He's like, "Oh, you're going to have to move." "What about gas stations? You ever bought beer at a gas station?" I'm like, "Well, yeah. Who hasn't bought beer at a gas station?" "No more gas stations." "You know, what about the grocery store? You ever bought beer at a grocery?" "Well, yeah, of course I will. You're not allowed to go to grocery stores anymore." "What about restaurants? You like to eat?" "Oh, yeah, I like to eat." "Well, most restaurants have bars in them now, so you can't go out to eat anymore." "What about sporting events? You like football and racing?" "And yeah, well, they serve alcohol there. You can't go there anymore." And I mean, he went on, I know, for like 5 or 10 more minutes. Just over, and I was like, "Wow," you know? And, you know, when he was done, I go, "Wow, that really sucks." You know? And he goes, "That doesn't sound like much of a life, does it?" And I was like, "No, it doesn't." And he goes, "Well, thank God that's not what AA offers." You know, he said, "Don't get me wrong. When somebody's new, I recommend you don't hang out at bars and places like that. I mean, that's just good common sense." He's like, "But what this promises me is that if I do these steps and I find this power greater than myself, I will be safe and protected, and I can go anywhere. Because what kind of life would it be if we're just hiding in church basements for the rest of our lives? I mean, that's what I did when I, you know, tried to pull off time without a drink, which is, 'God, do it me, you know, get me through another day.'" And he's like, "That's not what this is." You know, he said, "It says we're recovered. It doesn't say we're cured, but it says we can be recovered, that it will no longer be a problem for us." And I mean, that really hit me hard. And that's been my experience with this. I mean, I laugh with my wife all the time. When I was drinking, I never got invited to an open bar. Ever. Ever. And it seems like 5 times a year at least I get invited to some kind of work event or something that free booze all night long. And you know, even at like 2 years sober, my grandfather, who was a gentleman who never had a drop of alcohol in his house his entire life, at 2 years sober started making homemade wine in his garage and giving gallon jugs away for Christmas. You know, I mean, it was just like, what in the world is going on? But, you know, to me, this I mean, God's got a sense of humor, I'm telling you. But what it meant for me when he told me that was that, you know, I wasn't going to have to cower in fear over alcohol, that I really could go and be a part of the world and do that kind of stuff. And like it says, assuming I am spiritually fit, that is absolutely important. If I'm not in a good place, it's not a good idea for me to go. And I've also learned that I go to these places as long as I can be useful. And once I'm no longer useful, it's time to go. And I've had that experience with a lot of work parties. I work for a construction company, and, you know, construction guys love to drink. And I don't mind going out if they have, you know, like, for instance, once a year they have, like, a guy's night out where you go play pool and you do all that kind of stuff just as a thank you. You know, and after 1 or 2 hours of pool and everybody starts getting a little, you know, and they start telling you the same story again, there's just like automatically now this little meter that goes off that just says, you know what, it's time to go. You know, I've shown up and I've shown my appreciation for what they've given me, but it's just time to get out of here. But it also says we can go to the most sordid places in the world and be safe and protected. I have a guy that's just recently called me again that I used to sponsor years ago that has been in that detox. I think he's got the record for being there, and called me up and asked me to help him again. And I can remember driving down to this hotel in Petersburg. It's not even a hotel. It's a motel. I mean, it was a pretty rough place, and it was in a horrible part of town. At about 1 o'clock in the morning, me and another guy went down there to get this guy because he had asked for help. And you know, we show up to this place, and it's horrible and it's nasty. And I mean, there's like 1,000 Mad Dog bottles everywhere, and you know, we're having to drag him to the car and feed him booze on the way to the detox. And you know, but never once did I ever feel in danger or in harm. I mean, we just got in the car and we went. And that's the kind of power that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me, that this God that I have found has given me, that if I have a good reason for being there, I can go anywhere alcohol is. I mean, that's power from a guy that woke up and at 6:30 in the morning was thinking about taking a drink, to a guy that can be around alcohol, do things, and it doesn't bother me at all. You know, like I said, it doesn't mean that I go hang out in these places for, hey, let me just go sit at the bar and watch everybody drink and show you how long I can sit here without drinking. I mean, that's insane. but I mean, I've been to some crazy places and some, you know, I mean, just being able to go to concerts and things like that and actually hear the music. Remember the concert. I mean, I went to a lot of great concerts when I was drinking, and I don't remember any of them, you know, or to be able to go to a comedy club or, you know, just all those kind of places and just be part of life and not have to fear alcohol. I mean, that's serious power, and that's what this 12-step offers, that if I do the rest of this, I will be given this power, but I also have to make sure I give it away. And to me, that's where the spiritually fit comes in, is that if I'm rigorously trying to participate here and help other people, you know, I have nothing to worry about.
Right. I'm going to kind of mash together these last two paragraphs. Your job now is to be at a place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others, so never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. And then a simple sentence on page 103. After all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to. Jeremy?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I kind of hit on that earlier. I kind of jumped ahead. You know, as far as being asked to go, I like sordid places. To me, those were hangouts. I mean, they may be considered sordid places today, I guess, but, you know, I love that, you know, dark, dingy, you know, bar with like three people at it and the jukebox just skips and, you know. All right, I love that. Our problems were of our own making. I was so devastated when I found out that all the devastation that happened in my life was of my own making. What? No. You know, I had what my sponsor called nice guy syndrome. It's like, you know, I know I've done a few things wrong, but life has just really given me a bad deal, you know? You know, it's just, you know, it's ridiculous how bad I've been treated. And then, you know, it's amazing what, you know, the freedom that came through the steps, not just the freedom from alcohol, but one of my favorite speakers, Don P, used to say, you know, the steps don't show me who I am, they show me who I'm not. You know, they bust that delusion that I'm just really this nice guy that tried really hard. And, you know, it doesn't mean I never did anything nice. The steps aren't there to make me the worst person on earth. That's not what it's about. What it's about is for me to see the truth about myself, that every scrape that I got into and all these tragic things that happened to me, you know, that I had something to do with, that I initiated most of the time and or put myself in that situation. And to not be fighting that today, that the bottle is just a symptom. And that was a spiritual awakening for me to realize that drinking wasn't really my problem. It was my solution. You know, my problem is when I don't drink, you know, and I always tell new guys that. I'm like, you know, that's an easy way to tell if you're a drunk. If you go 3 or 4 days without a drink and you feel 10 times worse, you know, you feel like the world's just crashing down on you. I was like, then maybe you're an alcoholic, because if you're not, you just stop drinking, you should just feel better. And I don't. That's what alcohol did for so many years was, you know, when that first one goes down, oh, thank God it's going to be okay for 5 minutes. You know, I mean, that's, you know, that's the power that booze had. So imagine trying to give that up. The one friend that's always been there for me, no matter what's going on, it makes me feel better. And today I don't have to fight that, because what AA has given me is a solution that's 100 times more powerful than alcohol. Don't get me wrong, it's not easy, and I would love AA to be the, oh, okay, I feel better now. You know, it's not, it's just not that easy sometimes. I mean, it's really hard to put into words the transformation that this program and that this power that I have found has done for me, you know. And to me, the freedom comes from, and the protection comes from this continued participation here. Because like she said, those people that I know that have unfortunately lost the fight to alcoholism, I never love seeing that. You know, my father-in-law, I think he's 34 or 35 years sober, says it all the time, that unfortunately some of us have to die so the rest of us can live. And that sounds really harsh, but I can't tell you how many times that saved my butt. When I hear, oh, did you hear so-and-so didn't make it, or so-and-so's drinking again, or whatever, you know, when I start complaining that these meetings are too much, that I'm so inconvenienced, that whatever, the 6 hours a week I give to AA, you know, for meetings and a couple of phone calls is so inconvenient. You know, I go to work for 40 hours a week, and I hardly complain about that, other than they don't pay me enough, you know, of course. But, you know, it gives me that shot in the arm that says, wow, you gotta shut up and quit being ungrateful, you know, because I should not be alive. I mean, I really shouldn't. I mean, alcoholism isn't just, oh, I'll drink and I'll make an idiot of myself and not pay some bills. I mean, yeah, that was kind of at the beginning, but at the end of my drinking, I was praying for God to kill me in my sleep, you know, every night for 7 months straight. Please don't let me wake up. And opening my eyes and being disappointed I was still alive. You know, that is not a pain I wish on anybody. And to be sitting here going, my life is miraculous, and not because I'm rich and famous or anything like that, but because that stuff is gone. You know, there's a peace and a joy and I know there's a power here, because every time we get together, I feel it. I've never gone to a meeting and not felt better when I left. I mean, I may still have felt crappy, you know, because of whatever's going on in my life, but I always feel better when I come here, and that lets me know that there's something working here. And I am safe and protected as long as I stick with you guys, you know, and I do what I'm supposed to do. So I'm really thrilled to be here with you guys tonight.
Thank you. 2 minutes. Pass the seventh tradition basket. Seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contribution. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential. At every level of AA service, it is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? Any at all? Sarah.
I'm Sarah and I'm an alcoholic.
Sarah.
This group is putting on a mini conference in this 25th and 26th. There's the orange flyer with all the information you need. Bob D from Las Vegas is coming, and he's a big deal. That's one of the best things about it, too. So, thank you.
Thanks.
Read the flyer.
Thank you. Steve.
Thanks.
They'll let you know. Any other? The Simple Actions group is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Would home group members please raise their hands? And not to embarrass anyone, but is there anybody in the room tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd just like your first name so we could welcome you. Let's see. That's it. Thank you all for all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at
Plaza del Sol.
That's on 22nd and Colonial. I call it that Mexican place. 22nd and Colonial. It's not far from here. Make a right on Colonial when you leave the parking lot and go to 22nd and you're in business. 20th. Not 22nd. No, it is 22nd. 22nd and Colonial.
Very good.
Is anybody inspired to read the last two paragraphs on page 164 tonight?
My name is Andrea, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Andrea.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you all again. Let's close in the usual manner. Judy, would you lead us?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen. Amen.